Crown of Thorns by Iris Bluefic. Chapter 59. Dance at my wedding. Uriel hung up and set her phone face down on the coffee table, glancing out of the window. Not that she could see anything at this hour, what with midnight having crept up on her during Crowley's two-hour rant about the latest conversations he'd had with everybody's favourite ex-antichrist.
"Are you sure I can't bring you some of this?"
Raphael shouted from the kitchen.
"It's such a shame we don't use these painted bowls Aziraphale handed over when you expressed a liking for them."
"You want to use the bowl de chocolat for cocoa instead of eating cereal out of them?"
Uriel asked, tugging listlessly on her left earring. Her body's low-grade silver allergy was probably the cruelest joke the universe could have played on her, aside from whatever wrongness was afoot. She hadn't heard Crowley so worked up in a long time. Something felt off. If political climates in Britain and America weren't proof enough, then she didn't know what was.
"That's the idea,"
Raphael said, coming in with one brimming bowl balanced precariously in each palm.
"They hold almost twice as much as our largest mugs, so this is a win-win situation."
"No,"
Uriel thought, taking one of the bowls off Raphael's hands so that he could sit down without spilling them.
"We are all going to lose. Or at least someone is. Something. Somewhere."
"Why the long face, darling?"
Raphael asked, reaching out to brush Uriel's cheek with his thumb. Uriel shook her head, bringing the bowl up to her lips.
"Weirdness. I've been trying to shake it."
"Are you homesick?"
Raphael asked, his expression darkening.
"I hate to tell you, as bad as things have gotten here, I have the feeling they're about to get a lot worse back there."
"Crowley agrees,"
she said, taking another slow sip of cocoa.
"He's distraught. Adam didn't help."
"Well, of course he didn't,"
replied Raphael, as if this came as no shock.
"The boy's 3 years off 40 and barely knows how to handle the metaphysics of his own existence. The whole damn planet was a much easier proposition when he was 11 and didn't have baggage yet."
"Please don't tell me you're calling Anathema's girl baggage,"
Uriel muttered into her sleeve, eyes darting towards a sudden suspicious movement outside.
"I might have to smack you."
Raphael winced, preoccupied with sucking down about half the remaining contents of his bowl.
"What in creation gave you that idea? Darling, no, I mean the kind you get just living."
"Sorry,"
Uriel said, watching Raphael's eyes crinkle fondly, like they always did, at her Canadian diction.
"I didn't mean..."
She shivered as another shadow passed.
"Can I ask a favor?"
"You're gearing up for a busy night, aren't you?"
Raphael sighed, getting to his feet with bowl in hand. He rose, came around the sofa, kissed the top of her head, and went back to the kitchen.
"That's what I'm afraid of, yeah,"
Uriel admitted, listening as he rinsed out the bowl.
"Turn in without me. Watch something on TV. The harder you're snoring when I come to bed, the better."
"Oh, it's a shame,"
Raphael called back, yawning, his footsteps heading for the hall.
"Because I might have been convinced to let you try some of that shit from the book you've borrowed."
"Shibari can wait,"
Uriel said, too softly for Raphael to hear. She continued to sip her cocoa, because she was at a loss for what to do as the shadow fell across her.
"Hello, old friend."
"I didn't realize chocolate had that significant an effect on cordiality,"
said Azrael, stepping up close behind her.
"Long time no see."
"I got busy,"
Uriel sighed.
"We all did. There was an awful lot to not remember in a hurry."
"More recollection seems to be in effect than absent-mindedness."
"Oh, for sure,"
Uriel agreed, swallowing a bitter laugh.
This island doesn't forgive and forget.
Azrael set his hands on her shoulders.
It is time for the first of them to go.
Uriel shivered and shivered, could not for all eternity stop shivering.
I don't understand.
He sighed, or at least seemed to sigh.
The humans you've come to love best.
That's...
Uriel leaned forward, bracing herself against the coffee table.
That's not why I'm here.
Think of it as subcontracting.
Azrael continued.
You're in the neighborhood, and I'd like to use up some of the holiday I've accrued.
His bony fingers twitched.
I'll owe you one,
he added, rendering the words foreign, devoid of warmth.
The soul in question will not go gentle.
Then this is what I ask,
said Uriel without hesitation.
Not Pippa. I won't be the one to take her when the time comes, not even if she plans on hanging around. That's going to be all you, buddy.
Azrael's fingertips beat staccato against her collarbone.
I accept. Fair is fair.
He withdrew one hand, reaching into his robes to produce a scroll, which he placed on the table. The document neatly unrolled itself. Uriel glanced down at the name and date, pursing her lips.
Why write on the tail of New Year's? Seems like a lot of fuss just after the holidays, doesn't it?
Because it is written,
Azrael replied.
Do not question ineffability.
Ineffability, my ass,
Uriel muttered. But by the time she'd grabbed the scroll and attempted to hand it back over her shoulder to him, both the document and her dreadful visitor had vanished.
What was that about your ass?
Raphael called from the bedroom.
And do you care to repeat it?
I hate this,
Uriel thought, leaning forward on her elbows, raking her fingers through her hair.
I hate my existence and this fucking planet and every life form contained in it.
Raphael wandered back into the living room, predictably naked, but his expression was one of sheer, helpless alarm. He went directly to the spot behind Uriel, setting his hands exactly where Azrael's had been moments before. His snarl was low and threatening.
If that nosy old fuck with the dramatic cloak still thinks he's your substitute line manager...
It's no use,
Uriel cut in, watching several tears drip from her chin into her cocoa.
This has been a long time coming. They hate Adam because they can't touch him, so they'll always go after what he loves. Who he loves. And they'll make us suffer because we've joined his cause.
Hell's well in hand,
Raphael murmured, wrapping his arms around her.
Why the horsemen?
Not sure I'd call Azrael one of them when it comes down to it. Even I'm a face of death.
Yes, darling,
Raphael replied, nuzzling the shell of her ear to no purpose other than comfort.
And you were the only face I'd want to see if my time ever came.
Don't know whose face I'd see,
Uriel whispered, her fingers stiff on Raphael's forearm.
Oh, how lovely,
Aziraphale remarked, shuffling through the stack of envelopes and postcards he'd just collected from the mailbox.
There's one here from dear Mrs. Godreau,
he said, raising his voice, slamming the door behind him.
Are you listening to me, Crowley?
The cottage's nameplate rattled, so Aziraphale drove the screws in tighter with a thought.
Yeah?
Crowley called from the living room, where he was still engrossed in the telly.
She must be, what, 90 by now? Still in the flat right below my old one, is she? We're overdue a visit.
So it appears,
said Aziraphale, double-checking the return address as he tossed the rest of the stack aside on the kitchen counter. He tore into the envelope without bothering to summon his letter opener from the computer desk, eagerly opening the card.
It's got festive geese on the front.
The sofa thumped, propelled momentarily backwards by the force with which Crowley had launched himself off it. He dashed into the kitchen, latching onto Aziraphale's shoulder to peer over.
They're festive on account of the ribbons around their necks, I suppose?
He ventured dubiously.
I ought to have thought to do that with the girls on Christmas Day. Would have worked a treat.
Which set of girls?
Asked Aziraphale archly, spreading the card wide so they could both read its contents.
I shudder to think, but the feathered ones might have taken it better than the human ones.
Regular wonder we got them all here for their gifts on Boxing Day,
Crowley said, snaking his arms around Aziraphale's waist.
Her handwriting gets worse by the year. Decipher that for me?
It says, Holiday felicitations to my friends of yesteryear. Until we meet again. Harriet.
New Year's is 3 days away,
observed Crowley.
Let's go as soon as the hangover wears off.
Pippa says this one's BYOB,
Aziraphale said, enunciating each letter.
On account of her pills.
We've got to get her on painkillers that play well with booze,
Crowley remarked cheerfully.
She assures me the entirety of the device pulse of her young contingent is coming, as are the rest of the usual suspects. Mandy and Yvonne, Marie and Jamie, young Master Bob, and even our perpetual nuisances up the road,
said Aziraphale pensively.
Madame Tracy and Chadwell declined.
Tracy says this weather makes a hermit of the old scoundrel,
Crowley said.
Direct quote.
He gave Aziraphale's middle a brief squeeze.
Ah, there's what's left of my test cupcakes,
he said, satisfied, tongue darting out to taste the shell of Aziraphale's ear.
Delicious.
If your catering contracts weren't going so well, I'd punish you for that one,
Aziraphale sniffed.
Perhaps that godforsaken white jacket is your true calling in life after all.
It's not my fault I wear it so well,
said Crowley, aiming for coy, but his tone was far too breathily distracted.
It's not my fault you look fetching in that hideous jumper Pippa gave you either.
Aziraphale sighed, dropping Harriet's card on the worktop.
Only if you don't insist on giving the girls run of the house like last time. I'm convinced banning them from the bedroom won't prove much use in the long run. Tamar will have worked out lock-picking before long.
Do you see me making a break for the shed?
Crowley ventured, lightly sinking his teeth into the back of Aziraphale's neck.
I'm convinced Jude's unexpected, expecting, is keeping all the aunties busy. Where, I ask you, where did she find a drake this time of year?
Same place their ill-fated mother found one in bloody November.
Aziraphale squeaked, shivering as Crowley pinched at his nipples through the cotton-wool blend.
Ah! Crowley!
Crowley remarked, letting one careful, curious hand dip south.
Are you...
No, alas,
Aziraphale murmured, tugging Crowley's hand up to his lips, kissing it in apology.
Won't you stop fussing?
Crowley asked, swaying them where they stood.
After all the trouble you've taken to get me off the rocks where Pippa's concerned, heaven only knows.
It isn't just her,
Aziraphale said, rubbing agitatedly at Crowley's faintly rope-burnt wrists.
Look, I'm getting better at this kinky stuff,
said Crowley shyly.
And you like it.
Aziraphale nodded reluctantly, turning just enough in Crowley's embrace so they could kiss.
I'd rather leave a few more days before tying you up again,
he admitted.
Let those heal.
I could heal them if I wanted,
Crowley pointed out, this time slyly.
So could you.
Your sarcasm leaves nothing to be desired,
as Zirafel conceded, backing him up against the counter, satisfied by the resulting gasp thump.
You may get little out of me today, my dear, but that doesn't mean...
I really...
said Crowley, already scrabbling palms first at the countertop behind him with elbows awkwardly bent.
Really ought to go check on the food situation out there. And...
And nothing,
said Aziraphale, settling decisively on his knees, unbuttoning Crowley's superbly worn-in Japanese denim.
You'll permit me 5 minutes, indulgence.
Can't say whether I'm flattered or concerned that you think I'm a suitable chaser to cupcakes,
Crowley muttered, sucking in his breath as his fingers crept shakily into Aziraphale's hair.
Oh, I think... Aziraphale.
Hands above your head,
said Aziraphale sternly, pausing mid-lick.
Cupboard, now.
I hate you so much,
Crowley panted, scrabbling backwards at the doors until he'd swung them out far enough to use the lower corners for purchase.
So, so unbelievably much. Angel.
I could get used to savoury afters,
said Aziraphale, glancing up at him through lowered lashes. While Aziraphale neglected shedding his coat in favour of hugging Pippa to death, Crowley hovered awkwardly behind him with a fresh tray of cupcakes in hand. So much for arriving on time.
Hey,
Rob shouted, barrelling past Aziraphale and his gran, latching onto Crowley.
You're late.
It couldn't be helped,
Crowley said, setting his free hand on the boy's head.
I wanted to time the baking so that these...
He brought the tray down so that Rob could inspect his handiwork.
Would still be warm when we got here. Would you mind tasting one for me?
Caw,
breathed Rob, releasing Crowley's legs in favour of grabbing a cupcake.
What's in these?
He asked, making an uncertain face around the gooey mouthful he'd immediately taken.
Lavender and white chocolate,
Crowley said,
which is not so much actual chocolate as a cocoa butter derivative type confection, but I imagine you're not fussed about the particulars.
I'm particular,
Rob insisted, stuffing the remainder in his mouth.
Lavender is flowers.
Unable to parse the statement as obvious feedback, Crowley decided to interpret it as a positive.
As long as you like it, that's all that matters,
he reassured the boy.
Do you want another?
Rob shook his head, crumpling the wrapper between his palms.
Mum says I can't spoil my supper, even though she and Dad aren't here. They like to be alone on New Year's.
Crowley surrendered the cupcake tray to Pippa, relieved that Aziraphale had finally let go of her.
Rob, won't you hang Crowley's coat? There's a darling,
Pippa said, patting Crowley's cheek as she carried the tray off towards the kitchen.
And how are we today?
She called over her shoulder.
Worse for wear,
Crowley yawned, surrendering his outer layer to Rob.
Haven't slept much.
Aziraphale gave Crowley an I can't believe you look. Rob, meanwhile, had already dashed off.
Dear me,
Pippa called from the kitchen.
We can't have you missing your beauty sleep, can we?
Never said it was a bad thing,
Crowley replied, smirking at Aziraphale.
Needed another hobby.
I can't take you anywhere,
hissed Aziraphale under his breath, steering Crowley by the shoulders into Pippa's living room.
Do try to keep the marks under wraps, won't you?
Under the cuffs and under the collar,
Crowley thought, catching sight of the twins and a young woman he didn't know on the sofa.
Is the first place half of this lot will look.
Speak of the devil,
Natalie gushed, hopping to her feet.
We were just telling Danny she's got your dancing skills to look forward to. Once we're all drunk later, anyhow.
Janet rolled her eyes and nudged the young woman next to her. The two of them got up in tandem.
This is Danny,
Janet said, beckoning Crowley over, while Aziraphale pretended not to be disgruntled about the fact that Natalie was now hanging off his neck with a happy squeal.
Pleasure's all mine,
Crowley said, pushing his sunglasses up into his hair, because if this was the only human in the house who hadn't seen his eyes, they'd best get that out of the way. Danny's lips parted in faint surprise, her tiger's eye irises dilating.
"You're Crowley,"
she stammered.
"I take it the gossip mills are running par for the course,"
he sighed, shaking her hand.
"Yes, why?"
"They told me you had weird eyes too,"
Danny said, indicating her own.
"I've got this gold stripey thing in the brown, see?"
She grinned.
"I'm Janet's girlfriend, in case she was too chicken to say."
"Right,"
Janet muttered, arms folded tightly across her chest.
"I was just about to tell him. Lay off."
"Charmed, I'm sure,"
Aziraphale cut in, peeling himself free of Natalie.
"How did you two meet?"
"School,"
said Danny, unclipping her fine braids before sweeping them up again in a different configuration.
"This one here never raises a hand in class. Made me dead curious."
"That's not how I trained you,"
Crowley reminded Janet.
"Do you remember that time when..."
"Yeah, blimey, that medieval sex book,"
Natalie said.
"Crowley is better than a graduate tutor."
"I heard all about the sex book,"
said Danny, eager to avoid hearing the story in duplicate. Crowley endured another 5 solid minutes of hugs and greetings before he and Aziraphale managed to carve out some space for themselves on the sofa. Janet and Danny escaped to the floor.
"Girls, girls, girls,"
Anathema sighed, curled in one of Pippa's armchairs, already well into a glass of wine.
"Newt and my son-in-law are even more outnumbered than they were before."
"Where are they, anyway?"
Crowley asked, longing for a drink.
"Your eldest and your other half."
"Adam's got them tied up on a mistletoe hunt,"
Anathema said.
"As per Pippa's wishes. Futile."
"True enough. The shops will be picked clean,"
replied Aziraphale with feigned disappointment.
"Don't think you're getting off so easy this year,"
Crowley muttered.
"I'll summon some if I must."
"I could have got you a speak from the nursery,"
said a voice to which Crowley still hadn't fully acclimatised, its owner striding into the room with the brown paper bag.
"Who wants party poppers?"
"Those don't come till later,"
Mary insisted, rushing up behind Jamie to snatch the bag from him.
"Gosh,"
Crowley remarked, returning Janet's amused glance.
"The gang's nearly all here."
"I'm insulted,"
Mandy shouted from the kitchen, finally content to break her silence.
"Assumed I wasn't here, yeah? Because you didn't spot me hanging around the telly with those lazy arses?"
"Maybe concentrate more on what you're doing,"
said a voice tentatively identifiable as Ivan's.
"Don't make me come in there and supervise you,"
Crowley threatened.
"What's cooking?"
"None of your beeswax,"
Mandy shouted back, but it was unclear whether she was addressing her fiancé or Crowley.
"Your help would be superfluous. I already run a kitchen with my eyes shut."
"Your mouth's another matter,"
said Pippa, which got a snort from Ivan and a scoff from Mandy. Crowley scooted over, his thigh pressing hard into Aziraphale's, in order to make room for Jamie next to him, while Mary took the bag over to a curious Anathema for inspection.
"Long day?"
"Very much,"
said Jamie, smiling.
"I could not get away from the plants as early as planned."
"They'll stall at all costs,"
Crowley agreed, vaguely aware Danny was watching him.
"Bastards."
After a few more minutes of commotion, Rob dashed in from the bedroom with a toy helicopter in hand, insisting he couldn't hear the movie. Crowley ended up with a lapful of fidgeting primary schooler, while they all did their best not to lose the plot of Elf. After a while, Mandy wandered in from the kitchen and sat down at Crowley's feet. She tugged at the hem of Crowley's trousers, while Rob dropped his toy and started playing with her hair.
"We've got to talk,"
she mouthed, glancing over her shoulder at Crowley.
"Ditch the kid?"
Crowley nodded, feeling his stomach sink.
"Aziraphale, do you think you could take Rob for..."
"Come along,"
said Aziraphale, shifting Rob from Crowley's lap over to his own, earning a gasp from Mandy when Rob didn't release her hair soon enough.
"Let them go have a look at the food."
Mandy got up, pulled Crowley to his feet and dragged him out, still clinging tightly to his hand. Crowley followed her down the hall, remembering the time Raphael had trapped him and swapped their fancy dress ensembles. Rob's bedroom door was ajar, so Mandy pulled Crowley inside.
"Those canapes must be in serious trouble,"
Crowley remarked, frowning at her.
"What is it?"
"I need to know if I'm going crazy or whatever, and I figure you're a good judge of that,"
she said. Crowley nodded slowly.
"After all we've been through, yeah, the odds are quite in your favour."
"Valentine's Day, at the cottage,"
said Mandy in agitation.
"We scheduled that. We did, right?"
"I can indeed confirm that yet another wedding is scheduled for that date,"
Crowley said.
"My wedding,"
Mandy said, as if trying to convince herself of this fact. And Crowley felt his stomach sink even lower.
"The one my mum's coming down for and everything."
Crowley set both hands on her shoulder, shaking her gently.
"You have nerves. It's normal."
"I haven't got nerves,"
she said, her head snapping up.
"I've got..."
She frowned, squeezing Crowley's wrists, causing the rope burns to sting under his cuffs.
"Concerns."
Biting his lip, Crowley raced through every possible meaning of that statement.
"About the date?"
"No,"
said Mandy quietly, letting her hands drop to her sides.
"It's just, Ivan's family hasn't RSVP'd, although he reassures me that they're coming."
Her frown deepened.
"He's vague. He won't say exactly how many people that is, or... Look, it's rude. You need numbers."
"We can accommodate however many,"
Crowley reassured her.
"Don't make it your concern."
"Last time there was a wedding at yours, some demon wore me like a bridesmaid's dress,"
she snapped.
"Things tend not to go well when I'm involved, all right? It's some kind of curse."
Crowley drew her close, wrapping his arms around her without hesitation.
"That's a lie, and I know lies when I hear them. I might not have been good at my old job, but I'll have you know..."
"I'm worrying about nothing,"
Mandy whimpered, clinging to him.
"But I'm just so frustrated. He's gone all breezy as you please. Oh yeah, family's going to show up. So many to choose from, it doesn't even matter who. And here I am with just Mum, nobody else to..."
"We've discussed this,"
Crowley said, resting his chin on top of her head.
"I'll give you away."
Mandy laughed, sniffing against his shoulder.
"I know. We better get back out there, or Az'll think I'm trying to steal you away again. Is he all up in knots about it?"
"He's worried about the fairy lights and a lack of anything blooming,"
said Crowley, deadpan.
"Knock, knock,"
said Raphael loudly, barging into the room without warning.
"Oh!"
he intoned, covering his throat with one poised hand.
"I had no idea I was interrupting."
"Shut up,"
Mandy groused, shoving Crowley away from her, wiping her nose on her hoodie sleeve.
"Wedding woes,"
Crowley said, instinctively stepping between Raphael and Mandy.
"Not now."
"I wanted to wish the bride-to-be a happy new year, darling,"
said Raphael, looking Crowley up and down.
"But since you're standing in the way..."
He planted a messy kiss on Crowley's cheek. Crowley rubbed at the spot, eyes screwed shut, listening as Mandy let Raphael hug her tightly.
"If there's a party in the bedroom, why am I not invited?"
Buriel asked, raising her voice in the hall.
"Let's get out of here,"
Mandy said, tugging on Raphael's hands.
"Soph and Adam will arrive soon."
"Sure, wrap it up and leave me hanging,"
Uriel retorted, peering inside, lighting up when she spotted Crowley.
"Hiya! Is that Rafe's lipstick plastered to your face already?"
Crowley rolled his eyes, pushing past Mandy and Raphael, who were snickering.
"Guess."
"No, really?"
said Uriel, trailing Crowley as he exited the room and made a beeline up the hall.
"Yes, really,"
Crowley retorted.
"Your other half has a thing for one-upping everybody who's managed to get their mouth on me. What else is new?"
He paused to glance at her just before they reached the living room, startled by the dark circles under her eyes.
"Sleepless Wives Club, eh?"
"Fuck like you. Takes one to know one,
she countered, grabbing one of Crowley's wrists, winking.
We would really love to get a game of CAH going,
Raphael announced, tugging Mandy past them excitedly.
We've now got the UK and US editions in a bigger, blacker box.
Danny's eyes flicked briefly to Mandy and then back at Raphael.
You've got to be joking, right?
There's hell cards and there's genuinely offensive cards,
Mandy said.
We got rid of the latter.
Don't get rid of the hell cards,
Sophia shouted, coming in the front door with Adam and her father in tow.
Hell cards are the best, trust me. Sorry we're late. There was no mistletoe anywhere.
Can I play?
Rob begged, escaping Aziraphale's lap for purposes of attaching himself to Crowley.
Your gran might have a thing or two to say about that,
Crowley cautioned.
Pippa, I...
It's no use, love,
Pippa replied, still in the kitchen with Ivan.
He's taught his friends to play.
Then that settles that,
Crowley sighed, swinging Rob up in his arms.
Are you up for it, Angel?
I'm up for anything that involves trouncing you soundly,
said Aziraphale with taunting precision. Mandy was so drunk. By the time three rounds of Cards Against Humanity, more food than you could shake a stick at, and ignoring BBC's 2016 to 2017 transition coverage on the telly in favour of gratuitous kissing was over with, that Ivan literally had to hold her up to walk her inside once they got home. She yawned and sagged into his shoulder, towing out of her silver sequined ballet flats.
You shouldn't have overdone it,
Ivan said, shrugging out of his coat.
We work tomorrow.
Yeah, but...
Mandy said, bracing herself against the wall until the entryway had stopped spinning.
This year's going to be fucking shite, yeah? Except for the wedding. So I might as well.
Ivan was already barefoot and in his shirt sleeves, giving her an inscrutable brown-knit frown. He had a way of expressing condescension without even speaking, and sometimes she wanted to bash his face in for it. He'd got weird about stuff he'd never been weird about before, like Mandy's occasional overindulgence in, well, now that she thought about it, in just about anything.
We're in trouble,
he said.
And you know, in the eyes of the government, you don't make enough money to support a foreign spouse. Between the two of us, we barely make...
You're being an arse and just about ruining my New Year's,
Mandy told him, yawning.
Ugh, how many bloody times have I to tell you? It only applies for non-EU.
Keep your voice down,
whispered Ivan urgently, steering her away from the door.
The neighbours might report us. You know they came knocking that one time because of your music.
I think they came knocking because of your face,
retorted Mandy, shaking him off, heading to the bathroom. As she fumbled for her toothbrush in the dark, hitting the light switch with her elbow, she realised she was having a hard time remembering why she even wanted. Ivan wandered into the bathroom after her, phone in hand, eyes fixed on the screen as his lightning-swift thumbs tapped on the on-screen keyboard. Lately, he'd been texting more and more. While he reached for his toothbrush, Mandy gave his phone a brief sidelong glance. She couldn't make out the other party's name, but the entirety of the conversation appeared to be in Basque. She was nearly fluent now, but without a clear view, she couldn't make out more than the odd word here and there. Lonely, hurry, and why.
Crowley says it doesn't matter how many people come,
she said around her toothbrush.
So I don't care which of your family members are making the trip, as long as it's some of them.
That is a quantity I can promise you,
said Ivan, distractedly, toothbrush in hand, still texting.
Having a good conversation with somebody back at home?
She asked, spitting into the sink.
A cousin of mine you have not met on Skype,
Ivan explained, finally tucking his phone into his back pocket, reaching for the toothpaste.
He might try to make it in February. How's that?
Mandy shrugged, shedding her clothes perfunctorily.
A cousin is some family, yeah?
If Anne didn't even turn to look at her while she bent over to turn on the bathtub spigot.
I'm still in love with this idiot. God knows why,
she thought, feeling bile rise in her throat as she pushed back the shower curtain and wobbled ankle deep into hot water.
But he's out of love with Britain and everything in it. Maybe even me. Cousin my arse.
I'm heading to bed, Matea,
said Ivan, loudly enough for Mandy to hear him over the rush of spray and shampoo suds in her ears.
If I don't, my head will pound as badly as yours.
What the fuck ever?
Mandy whispered under her breath, rinsing out her hair. She wanted nothing so much as to dry off, tug into a flannel pyjama set, and drive over to the cottage. She'd done that once or twice in the past several months when Ivan had been a dick to her. Crowley had always come to the door in those silly Marks and Sparks pants and some worn-out T-shirt or other, let her in and settled them on the sofa with some late-night movie or American reruns. Setting her palms against the chipped tile and rotting grout, Mandy heaved until she was sobbing.
Wild party,
said Sophia, dully, having thus far been unable to roll out of bed. She covered her eyes with her forearm, groaning. She'd seen the clock. It was well past 2 in the afternoon. Adam's footsteps echoed down the hall, too spry and chipper for a guy who drank as hard as she, Mandy and the twins had.
This ought to help with your hangover,
he said, his weight coming down on the bed next to her, something cold settling on top of her head with a crunch.
If that's a bag of peas, I don't want it,
Sophia moaned.
I don't trust Tesco's freezers to be clean.
Unable to get at the top of her head, Adam patted the compress.
Wrapped it in a tea towel.
Oh, well, that's all right then,
said Sophia, smiling in spite of herself. Everything was dark and throbbed intolerably, but the chill running from her forehead to her crown was pleasant.
Is this a trick you learned from my mum, or are you just making do in a pinch?
I learned this from my mum,
Adam admitted, settling back against the headboard hard enough to make it rattle. He had something crinkly in hand, probably the newspaper.
Better?
It certainly isn't worse,
Sophia allowed, wriggling her eyebrows against the pressure.
It's nice.
Good,
Adam said, letting one hand creep over to take hers under the covers.
Glad I'm useful.
Your usefulness is both charming and inventive,
Sophia informed him.
Bugger.
What, Soph?
Work tomorrow.
Yeah, and your dad expects me back to help him finish that freelance network setup nightmare.
Sophia felt her chest clench involuntarily, wondering if it was the nausea or the surge of anxiety.
I can't articulate this,
she told Adam hesitantly.
But I've been trying. Work isn't great.
They've been paying you for a while now,
Adam reminded her, squeezing her hand.
Most interns aren't as lucky as you were getting taken on like that. I reckon you're just nervous.
There's no path to advancement,
said Sophia, ashamed of how small she sounded.
I've checked the org chart 6 ways to Sunday. I'm in a dead-end position.
She swallowed the lump in her throat, hating herself for what she was about to attempt.
Adam, I wish...
We've been over this so many times,
Adam said softly, setting aside the paper, scooting down so he could lie alongside her with one arm draped across her middle.
I don't grant wishes.
Sophia felt her chest constrict again. She hiccuped, feeling her hot tears soak into the tea towel.
I've been writing on a job,
she confessed.
Stories, poems, anything. I'm a failure.
Your creative stuff's better than the PR you do for 'em,
Adam murmured.
You know that, right?
Frightened, Sophia nodded, remembering how Mandy had shrieked and hugged her when she'd made her first sale to a literary magazine around 6 months ago. She'd made more sales since.
Meanwhile,
Adam continued, curling in tighter on himself, nuzzling mopily into her tank top covered belly.
I've got a godfather, godfathers, really, who can't seem to stop reminding me the world's on its way to hell in a handbasket. As if they expect me to do something.
Somehow, knowing you don't grant wishes for powerful immortals either makes me feel better.
We aren't the only ones with problems. I'm worried about Mandy, if you want to know the truth.
Sophia shoved the bag of peas off her head, levering herself up on her elbows.
You've noticed too?
Adam sat up, his hair endearingly tousled, rubbing his stubbly cheek.
Last night, there was that thing where she pulled Crowley out of Pippa's living room for a talk,
he said with reluctance.
She only confides in him when she doesn't want to worry you.
They don't come over anymore when we invite them,
said Sophia, chewing her lip.
Mandy says Ivan's turning into more and more of a homebody. I feel so bad I've been going out with her whenever she asks.
She rubs her temples, flopping back against the pillows.
Oh,
I don't really mind,
Adam replied, looming over her, eyes wide and soft.
You're an ace friend.
Don't know how long she and I can afford to drown our sorrows in drink, is all,
Sophia admitted. Adam swooped down, kissing the tip of her nose, her eyelids, her forehead.
Maybe just head up the road to Crowley next time,
he suggested.
Those date palm cocktails appear out of thin air.
Sophia groaned, swatting him off, hauling the bag of peas back over her eyes.
Don't remind me.
It had been a week since New Year's, and Jamie still hadn't stopped pining for Crowley's cupcakes. He'd tried to coax the recipe out of Aziraphale's diffident husband several times before he and Mary had left Pippa's, but Crowley had told Jamie something different each time.
Google it. I swear it's one of the first things that came up. You know me. Trial and error is my middle name. Aziraphale was messing around and found it on Pinterest.
Determined, Jamie had applied himself to scouring both Google and Pinterest, and while he'd attempted no fewer than 5 batches from 4 different sets of instructions in 7 days' time, none of them had turned out quite the same way as what he'd tasted at the party.
"That man is the devil in human skin,"
Mary told him as they sampled Jamie's 6th attempt. Jamie shrugged, licking buttercream icing off his fingers.
"None of this had been terrible."
"If you don't give this up, I'll gain a stone before January's out,"
Mary sighed, washing her hands. Jamie brushed his own off against his faded canvas trousers, stepping up behind her at the sink.
"You've grown too thin since we met,"
he said.
"You lost more than a stone in 3 years."
Mary nodded, turning off the tap, humming at the feel of his touch against her hips.
"We've been busy beavers ever since you suggested we do our own landscaping,"
she told him fondly.
"Too much running around planting things, not enough eating,"
Jamie agreed, pressing his cheek against her hair. He opened his eyes, staring out of the window at the lightly frosted grass.
"It'll be spring soon,"
Mary pointed out.
"You could quit the nursery in another couple of months. We'll have saved up enough by then. Go into business for ourselves. I'll handle the maths."
"I would like nothing so much as to be business partners with my clever partner,"
Jamie agreed. Mary's fingers crept from Jamie's wrist to press against his jaw, trailing steadily towards his temple. Their landline rang loudly in the drip, drip, drip punctuated silence, startling them both.
"Hold it up,"
Jamie said, right in Mary's ear.
"I will go get it, and after I do that..."
"That's what you always say,"
Mary sighed, nonetheless sounding happy.
"You'll talk their ear off."
Jamie rested the outdated handset from its cradle on the wall.
Hello, how do you send this?
Listen, I hate to bother you at home,
said Crowley, unmistakably on the end of the line.
But we're in a bit of a bind. Aziraphale's insisting on flowers for February. You just know the Rugosas won't comply. I've forced them into a spot of early blooming before, don't get me wrong. Heat lamps and whatnot, tricks of the trade, you get my drift. But that was April, and this is February. I wouldn't even push the hellebores into blooming that early, and...
Hellebores sometimes bloom in February,
Jamie said reassuringly.
We may have a warm snap.
Your faith in our mercurial weather is hardening,
Crowley said thinly,
but I'd rather hedge my bets.
There was a faint tapping sound, perhaps Crowley's fingernails.
Can Rufus do weddings?
My employee does not like short notice,
Jamie said.
Under a month and a half is pushing it.
Look, if it makes you feel any better, I'll come in and help,
Crowley sighed.
I've got a real green thumb, you've said so yourself. You're forever wanting to know what my secrets are, whether it's cookery or growing things, so maybe I'll make it worth your while. Tit for tat?
Throw in showing me how to do the cupcakes,
said Jamie ruthlessly.
And you have a deal.
You drive a hard bargain,
replied Crowley, indulging his flair for the dramatic.
Terms accepted.
It's always a pleasure doing business with you,
Jamie laughed.
How are the apple trees doing?
Nothing amiss,
Crowley said tautly.
I'm holding my breath on the Roxbury's first crop, though.
Your collection of New World plants is very specific,
Jamie remarked.
Are you a Red Sox fan?
I've never cared all that much for the various types of hitting things with wooden sticks they do in North America, but you might try talking to Uriel about hockey. Ciao,
said Crowley, hanging up. Jamie rejoined Mary at the sink, carefully reinstating his hands against her hips.
Where were we?
Hodges and Hernaz,
Mary mused, shivering as he kissed her neck.
Has a very nice ring to it.
Crown of Thorns will continue in Chapter 59, Part 2.